echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a business podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations transform and grow value in a digital world. Episode 24, The Convergence of Social Media and AI. Today, we chat with Kate Bradley-Chernis, CEO of Lately, to learn what she thinks about life, music, innovation, and how her company is reinventing social marketing with artificial intelligence. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hood, a digital strategist at Google Cloud. Thank you for listening. Let's jump right into things. We have an awesome guest today. Let's welcome Kate Chernis. How are you doing today?
Hey there. I'm doing pretty good. The weather is not rainy and mild, so it's hard to complain. And the weather really does set the mood, right?
So let's start there. Share a little bit about your background and how you got here.
Growing up in Vermont, actually, I became a rock and roll DJ for a statewide radio station where we used to handpick the music ourselves. Whoa. And I learned the art of the theater of the mind and went on to be the music director of The Loft at XM Satellite Radio. So a wild ride, and this whole arena of pirates suits me pretty well because now I'm in startup life and I love the lawlessness about all of those careers. With radio, one of the things I learned, Chris, was how to make listeners into fans, because there's a big difference there, customers and evangelists. And it was about throwing everything you know about radio out the window. So no more big monster trucks. How do you talk to people and make them feel as though, even though you wield the mic and you're talking to 20 million listeners a day, which is what we had, that I'm talking just to you and I'm making you feel like you've got a voice. So it's a two-way street, which, by the way, is how all marketing should be. From radio, I went into marketing. I had an agency, but my first client was Walmart. And I built Walmart a spreadsheet system that ended up getting the project 130% ROI year over year for 3 years using everything I learned in radio.
One of the other things we do on the show is we ask our guest, what was the last thing you've downloaded? So is there anything that you've recently listened to, read, or downloaded that you'd like to share with everyone?
Downloaded. Okay. Wow. So I guess two things. Number one, I'm old school. I like to touch things. So I buy books, like actual books. I like to write in them and everything. So I've been reading the Beastie Boys biography or autobiography that the two remaining Beasties wrote. It's fascinating. It's so good because I'm a child of the 80s. And so it gives me all that nostalgia, which I love. I love swimming in the corniness of it. And what I love about this book, it's so well written because it's like they've talked the text, so I can really hear their voices. And it's an interesting format as well. So one of the guys will take a chapter, but then there are these little side paragraphs in a different color where the other one is commenting and like filling in some of the blanks. So it's just really interesting to see a new format like that. And then also the other thing that I would recommend is the book Breathe. So it talks about just breathing, why it's important, box breathing, all the things that one might need to do in a global pandemic or any other emergency situation to calm themselves down and be of use in the situation.
So I'm glad that you're a fan of the 80s. I am too. I mean, 80s was the best generation for movies by far. And if we go back to 90s, early 2000s, what became interesting was that there is this convergence happening between marketing and technology, where it became critical. It was essential that you had a social marketing budget, that you had technology that was helping you to get your message out there, really bridge this gap between the business that needed to reach customers and technology that was enabling that path. It's amazing to me how it continues to evolve. And this is where you come in, because you've been able to produce something that has totally taken social media to yet even another level. Share a little bit about Lately as a company.
Sure. And we're going to have to talk about John Hughes, clearly. He's the master of sound and emotion, which is where we're getting to here. So with Lately, we use artificial intelligence to create social media copy for you. Not to be a commercial, but just to give people the background so they can understand how all these pieces we're talking about play together. So what Lately does is it studies your social media analytics of any channel you give us access to, and it looks back for at least a year of your social posts, looking for what had the highest engagement for you. And then it builds a writing model based on the keywords, the phrases, the sentence structures, and then you have to feed it. So when you feed it any kind of long form content like text, so blogs, newsletters, press releases, chapters of books, or audio like this, or video, any kind of webinars or conference panels, that kind of thing. It takes the writing model, transcribes, looks for all those awesome sentences, and then atomizes your long-form content into hundreds of social posts that it already knows your audience is going to read or watch or hear. So the tie-in there around technology and art, which is really what we're saying, marketing is more art than science. I 100% believe this. That art part is hard. So let's get the science as far as possible so that the art part can be easier, but you don't want to remove the art part. In our world, I think of the art as the human. Or back to music, Keith Richards puts this super well. Without the roll, it's just a march. Rock and roll, baby. So think about that. The human is the roll in this scenario. So the way that AI succeeds is by collaborating with the human. So AI on its own, we're going to get you to 75% of the way there, but the human has to come in with the 25%, curate a little bit, help it learn, and then get you that connection, which is what you want.
We've witnessed an increase in social media activity over the last, obviously, again, 10 years or so. I think currently today, about 55% of the population is engaged in social media in some way. And what's interesting is that as it becomes easier, to your point, to make those connections leveraging technology, that might naturally increase. As we're also seeing, it's the means by which most people stay in touch, especially during the pandemic. Have you seen an increase in your services or in demand specifically due to the pandemic?
Sure. It's been a combination of things, and the pandemic actually helped us. So we saw nearly 300% growth in the last year. And we don't do any paid ads, and we don't do any cold calls and no cold emails. We only use our own AI for all marketing and lead gen. And our conversion rate was around 52% at the beginning of COVID, and now it's 98%. Let me say that again for folks, 98%, in case they were wondering about the validity of AI. But the role that COVID played was two, obviously work from home, but also mindset shift. So people were forced to dive into things that were already in motion. Some of those things would be work from home. Some of those things were figuring out how do we do a better job of connecting remotely, and in this case, through social, and understanding that it's not just vomiting information out there. It's really actually the effort that has to go in to get someone to do something. This is the objective of all communications, whether it's marketing or sales or trying to get your husband to take out the garbage or your children to do their homework. I want you to do something for me. And on social, there's really only two objectives. It's convert or reach. So if you boil that down, it's click or share. That's all it is. And watching people understand that marketing isn't just marketing. Marketing is sales. They're the same thing. So the end of the silos there, pretty interesting to see that coming around. And then watching both big brands and little brands start to try the same tactics, and they work. And it's really human connection is always the way. Technology, to your point earlier, is what has changed, but the basic principles have not. We forget this a lot because technology has made it so it's easier for us to be everywhere all the time. So then sometimes we forget that the magic recipe of the human has to be involved in order for that conversion to happen.
We all crave for that human connection, no matter what it is. The technology can enable additional relationships to blossom. I mean, look, we met online. That connection was enabled through the technology, but we still want conversation. We still want connection. We still want to feel like we're not talking to a robot. Or if we bring in our 1980 references, we can go to like war games where do you want to play a game and it's purely simulated. I mean, we don't want a simulated AI controlling our lives. Also, 80s reference, like Terminator. One of my favorite movies of all time was Weird Science.
Oh my God, I just watched that this summer again.
But that separation, as you've touched on, between the human elements and the technology elements are still so critical. And if they're missing, what do you have really?
Right, emptiness. Well, so let's nerd out for a second back to audio. So here's the thing about the neuroscience of music that I love so much, which tells us that when you listen to a new song, your brain must instantly access every other song you've ever heard before in order to index that new song in its library. So by default, bringing forth all this emotion, the nostalgia for the 80s in our case, and memory. Now, your voice, Chris, is also a note, like it has a frequency. And when everybody reads text, we hear the voice of whoever wrote the text in our heads. And it's the same idea. You're looking for familiar touch points to find the common ground so that I can sell you something and create trust. It's all cyclical, but it's also so simple. And if you think of writing more as audio, and I believe, that'll help you understand. I mean, the easiest trick, Chris, is to read what you write out loud. Read every social post before you push send out loud.
Let's bring it back to lately, because I think you've touched on something interesting. Yes, there are often brand voices. But what I also see is that that brand voice seems to shift from time to time. And I think part of why it shifts is either there's different people behind the scenes doing it. And so as individuals or personalities shift within an organization, that brand voice naturally also shifts. Or you have multiple people on a team who are doing it and there's no consistency between that. What I like about what Lately has and some of the artificial intelligence is it allows you to create some consistency in that presentation, right?
Exactly. Because you need variance, because you don't want people to be spam. You need the voice to be consistent. And so because the human can curate what our AI creates, it can help put up those guardrails like in a bowling alley, right? So it doesn't really matter where the ball goes. You know it's going to hit the pins as long as those bumpers are up. One interesting note, by the way, is everybody has key messaging guidelines. I learned what those were when I worked with Walmart. And I made some for Lately, but I made them to be very unique. So for example, I'll just give you a few and then I'll tell you why this matters. So one of them is read what you write out loud. Another is avoid the phrase check out. Check out is the most vapid, lazy call to action on the face of the planet. It means nothing. There's no visibility about what's behind whatever you want me to check out and click. It's like a mystery, but not in a cool way. So you need that teaser, when this is what Lately is designed to do, give you the mini movie trailer teaser to get you to take action. Think of all the great verbs we have, like thesaurus is right there. I have a one by hand, like a physical one. Or, for example, I think a lot about things like because and why. So why is an incredible word, because when you hear why, you expect the word because after it. It's very tricksy. And so you can use it to find out what the because is and click it. And by nature, the word because validates you as the authority instantly, creating trust. And trust is what people buy. So I wrote out these rules. There's about 26 of them, and they're all a little insouciant. And first, what we do is Lately learns from me. So I write almost all of my copy that comes in my personal social spaces. And then the AI learns from me as a baseline. And then I taught my staff the same rules. So then on our brand, it learns from them. And then our customers, we have these long onboarding sessions with you because we're teaching you the same thing so that the AI can then learn from everybody together. Again, marrying the human je ne sais quoi with the building blocks of the brand.
I think this is a broader conversation around just how we've become dependent upon technology. And yeah, no one wants to do it. They do feel like, well, I need somebody else to do this for me. I'm too busy. I've got other things going on. Help me.
Right. It's the afterthought. And especially in startup land, it's always the afterthought. So with that Walmart project, I'm not sure if I had shared this with you previously, but it was so fascinating. It was Walmart Foundation, plus uniting all their franchises, Bank of America and all of theirs, AT&T and all of theirs. We worked with the National Disability Institute, the IRS, and then United Way Worldwide and all of their constituents. And so this is about over 3 years, roughly 10 to 15, 20,000 people individually involved, trying to promote a good cause. That's what everyone was working for. And the first thing I did was try to understand how everyone did their marketing, because if we were going to create content for them, we had to understand what their skill sets were, not just the budget. And I saw that across the board, small company, library down the street, world's largest retailer, everyone hated writing. Poor writing. That was the thing. Everyone was hiring out for literally writing. And I thought, well, look at me, fiction writing major. Who knew?
Exactly. Let's dive in a little bit more to your organization. I'm curious about how your organization operates. How do you come up with ideas? How do you innovate on new features for your products and services?
I'm so glad you asked that because it's the thing I'm most proud of. I worked in corporate, Chris. I worked for IBM and XM and obviously with Walmart. And one of the things I saw was that there were a lot of really creative, intelligent people around who were being fettered. And I'm a wild horse. I'm going to win the race if you let me go. But the moment you put any ties on me, I'm just going to fall over and nothing's going to happen here, right? And so I treat my whole staff like that. Now, this is hard. And I don't know if it can last forever. But I bring in only other wild horses who can operate on a pretty autonomous MO, which has served us very well in COVID. And what we do is, because we've had to walk the walk internally, so this idea of technology and humans is what has shaped our corporate culture, because we rely on technology for our water cooler, for example. I talked to a black box of emptiness for a dozen years my whole life, so I know how to pull together people that I've never seen before or met before. And what does that take? So some of it is hard. Like some of it is individually calling each staff member at least once a week or following all of them on social. I know when it's the anniversary of someone's father's death. I know whose parents are suffering from cancer. I know whose kids are going through tough times in therapy because of COVID. And we talk about it as a group. So the corporate culture is so important to me. And you see it externally. So the way we market lately, the voice there is the same voice that my salespeople treat you once they talk to you. And by the way, people are allergic to this, Chris. I found that we don't have a sales deck presentation, that whole way to start the conversation, blah, blah, blah. We also treat our smaller customers just the same way we treat our enterprise customers, because it's important for us to get to know you and engage and understand how you want to engage. The internal way that we treat each other, just to really hone in on that some more, has been, it sounds corny, Chris, but it's been the most magical thing. I love my staff. Every year they come and they spend the night on the living room floor of my house. All of us get together, family style. We make tacos, which are the best because then you're reaching across. It's very collaborative kind of thing. And we do something wild, like we went skeet shooting, we went zip lining, because I'm building evangelists. And the reason why, all the things you and I have talked about here, the reason why the connection matters, the why the human is important, why you want to scale the unscalable, why the hard way is the way, is because the power of an evangelist is long tail, but you're going to turn around and go make the sales for me. 10 and 30 fold is what we've actually found.
It reminds me of one of my favorite 80s movies, Working Girl. Now, Working Girl is about a young woman who is trying to make a name for herself and build a career. And she's very smart, but she's going through the same battles and challenges within a corporation as we've been talking about. It begs the question, as a woman in an executive role in technology, what are some of the challenges and rewards that you've seen over the last couple of years?
Thanks for asking that, because it's so funny. When I started this journey, so people put you right in the box immediately. Ooh, startup tech woman, you got to do all these women things and these women groups. And like, I just kind of wanted to gag there because I was a tomboy and I have lots of women friends who I like, but like, I'm really not interested in going on a women's retreat or any of those things. But what I didn't realize was how big the problem was and that I could be part of the solution. So as it started happening to me, and I didn't even realize it, I had to have other women mentors. Joanne Wilson is one of my investors. And she was like, this is happening to you. This is why the goalposts are moving. And I was being gaslit constantly. And the first reaction, like I said, most women I know do this, is to think, what am I doing wrong? The tape starts rolling in your brain and you run down all the things that you've done wrong to cause this. And you haven't done anything wrong. It's the system and the way it's built. And so realizing that was really a huge moment for me, because it is my nature to default. And I see the glass half empty, Chris. That's my fabulous gift, right? That's what makes me a good CEO. I'm always looking for the problems, but it's often internalized. And helping other women, A, notice that is important, And then the other thing I've noticed was that I would see things happen that I thought were weird or wrong, but I couldn't put a name on it. And then it wasn't until after the fact that I realized what it was. And I would feel extremely dumb or, again, responsible in some way because I didn't call it out in the moment. I want other women to know that's okay. What's important is to tell people about the experience after the fact so that they can watch out for it. I'll tell this story. I went to meet an investor and someone mutual had introduced us. So it should be a warm intro. And he had my deck. So he had some materials about me. I go to the office. It's a glass office. I can see him there. I'm 15 minutes early. At the time of our meeting, I see that he picks up the phone and makes a phone call. So now our meeting is running late because he's making a phone call. And then finally, they move us into another glass room and he has an assistant with him. And we sit down and he starts asking me these questions that are all already online, really basic number stuff that he could have seen anywhere. And I'm like, hey, we're going to spend this as a valuable half hour we got here. I came all the way down from where I live. I spent 3 hours to come here. You want to ask me something you can research on your own? He's like, no, this is important. I'm like, okay, this is the second clue that I've had now, but I'm not listening. And I'm like putting myself through this torture. Then he keeps referring to me. His daughter's name is Katie. So he keeps calling me Katie, which is incredibly insulting. It's not in any way endearing. So now I'm a child and now we're clearly on unequal footing. And then he decides to lecture me on how I should be doing this pitch. And then he falls asleep on me twice during this half an hour with his assistant in the room. Like the whole your head breaks back kind of falling asleep. Now, Chris, I'm not boring. And so then he does something that a lot of investors do at the end when they want nothing to do with you, but they don't want to say no. So he pushes his chair back and he puts his hand behind his head like this. And he says, so how can I be helpful to you? Which is code for get out of my office, basically, right? And I stood up and I was shaking so hard. And I said, you can be helpful by never doing this to another entrepreneur again. And he's like, what? And he freaked out. And I relayed all these things to him. And he said, well, can I email you and apologize? And I was like, no, you've already wasted my time. And I walked to the door. I'm picturing myself opening it and slamming it. And I can't get out because it's a magnet. You know, those magnets? And I have to have him come and open it for me. It's the worst. And then I go and stand by the elevator in the glass room, which everybody can see me. And I'm just waiting. to stomp out of there. But that's one of those things where I did in the moment actually call him out and it felt so good. But the reason I was terrified was because this guy was a big deal. He could have told a million people about me. Maybe he did. Maybe that's why I never raised in New York. Who knows?
On that then, what is a tip or advice that you would share with any other woman who's an entrepreneur, who's listening right now, who's going through something maybe similar? What advice would you give?
I would say that number one, calling people out feels good. It feels really good. And I think it's super important to do that in every way that you can. You can do it in a classy way. You can do it in an entertaining way, clearly. And if you don't have the courage to do that, again, it's okay. At least write it down. Get it off you. That's the number one thing. And find other women and share the stories. Because when other people validate the experience, it becomes not your problem. You have more important things to worry about, especially as a CEO or any woman, any person has other things to worry about. But I think I'll give you a thing, Chris, that I love so much that anybody listening here can take. Underdogs, women, anyone else. I learned this from a woman who is a wellness neuroscientist. We were on a plane going to San Francisco. She was going to coach, I think, the team at Oracle, the executive team there. And I had asked her, I was like, oh, so what a fascinating job you have. What's the favorite thing that people love that you teach them? And she said this. She asks them to get in a circle and she says, everybody stand up really straight, like there's a string pulling you up through your head and think to yourself, this is my dignity, right? You're tall. And then pull your shoulders back and think, this is my strength. Right? So you got the cross now. So up and wide. And then if you just can imagine yourself putting your weight on your heels a little bit, gain that perspective to see the room. This is your vision. So it's dignity, strength, and vision. And then in that moment, out loud, say, I am committed to giving Chris an amazing interview or whatever it is, XYZ. I am committed to tripling revenue this year. I find that you can do this by yourself, you can do it in your own head. I used to go into bathrooms and do push-ups to get a pump before I went into a meeting. I'm not kidding. Now I do this. But it's a great way to like get that Amy Cuddy thing going on in your mind. without anybody seeing you put your hands up in the air.
So with that, we have a question of the day. Okay, here's our question of the day. Hi, Chris. We are an organization and our team is struggling with this concept of bringing in an evangelist. Now, you often talk about having evangelists come in to help grow our teams across the organization and across our customers. What are some of the requirements we should look for in that evangelist role? I think this question actually comes from our episode last week where I correlated the Star Wars fan base with an army of evangelists.
Yes.
And we actually talked about evangelism last week. So maybe not just necessarily what a job description might be for an evangelist, but maybe you could share some of the tips, like how do you grow evangelism internally at Lately, as well as building that evangelism for your customers?
Sure. So I think first is the evangelist can't be external. It has to be internal. And if you can't hire within, you've got a problem, a bigger problem, right? So that's the first thing, is to make those fans internally. And you know, this is easier than people think. You just ask people how they are. Ask people what they're like. Talk to people. It's the worst thing when the CEO is just up in this weird office that no one can get access to. And when they come around, people freak out. That's just bizarre. And we talked about me following my team on social, which I know you can't do that with hundreds of thousands of people, but you can do it with some. And you can also promote that behavior among your other staff. That's the key thing. One thing I am always surprised about with any company, large or small, is how many of the employees don't follow their own company on social. Again, if they're not, you've got a bigger problem. They should be resharing and liking your content more than anyone else. And you need to think about them and give them a reason to.
And one of the things that you mentioned, I think is really interesting, is that the role is a necessity. I often get asked, can we have somebody part-time? Is this a full-time role? Do we have to hire this person? And I say, sure, you can definitely have it as a part-time role. Just do it. Like, that's your starting point. I know you're going to eventually see the benefits if you do this the right way. But you have to start somewhere. And if that's a couple of hours per week for one person to just do it, start there. But it's required because it's so essential in growing your organization. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real honor having you and listening to all of the great insights you've shared with the listeners.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really had a great time getting to know you as well.
And thanks to all of you who are listening. If you would like to learn more about the show, or if you have questions, comments, or ideas for the show, please find us throughout social media and online, all at thatdigitalshow.com. And join us next week as we explore another business topic on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.